Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here today for another episode. This is number 431, and in just a moment, I'll be sharing with you a conversation I had with Andrew Hall, the co-founder of a company called No Story Lost, and we'll be talking about the importance of preserving memories of our loved ones. And I think you'll find that a really interesting conversation. First, I'd like to thank my latest supporter on Patreon, Akila Murphy. Thank you so much for joining the team at Patreon, and you should be receiving some special bonuses to thank you for your support. And also to thank Stacy and Boosie for joining the $10 for 10 years campaign, where I'm asking people to just donate a one-time donation of $10, which helps me celebrate the 10th anniversary of End of Life University. And the money will all go toward helping me buy a new laptop and microphone for this podcast. So thank you, Stacy Ann, for joining the campaign. I want to thank everyone who's been making contributions for several years now to keep this show free of ads and sponsorships and help me forego the expenses of creating a podcast. And if you're interested in offering some support, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support, and you'll find three different ways you can make a contribution. Thanks in advance for everyone who chooses to do that. I also want to remind you that I have a YouTube channel. If you like watching videos on YouTube, most of these interviews now have a video component. So you can go to YouTube and look for End of Life University and watch them there. And the address for the show notes page is eolupodcast.com. If you go there, you'll find links for things we talk about in each one of the interviews, and that will be really handy for you. You can also find a search bar there and look for interviews from the archives in case you'd like to go back and listen to other things. I want to let you know one more time that I am taking a little hiatus during the month of December in order to be a grandmother, and I will be airing interviews from the archives. So these are older interviews I did several years ago, but that I think have a lot of value. So there, you'll still be hearing an episode every week. They just won't be current. They'll be from the archives and from the past. So I hope you'll enjoy listening to those, and also preparing for all the holidays that arrive at the end of the year. And then I'll be back at the beginning of 2024 to get started once again. So we'll move on now with my conversation with Andrew Hall. I'll be back afterwards for a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm happy to welcome my guest, Andrew Hall. Andrew is the co-founder of No Story Lost, a service to help families capture their loved ones' stories into a beautiful print memoir book. Andrew started No Story Lost with his cousin and best pal, Jeremy, and we're going to talk all about the origin story for the company in our interview. And you can learn more at the website, nostorylost.com. So, Andrew, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat, excited to tell some stories, learn a bit from you. Should be awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it too. And I checked out your website. I saw the examples of some of the books you've created, and I realized like I had a little tug of the heart right away, because I thought, oh my gosh, like my dad would have loved this service so much. He was a storyteller, and he always said, I wish I could write a book. I'd love to write a book of my stories. And I thought, man, if only you had been there like all those years ago to help my dad. So that's right away. I knew I want to interview you about what you're doing, and maybe have you start with just telling us where the idea came from.
Yeah, for sure. Happy to tell the whole backstory, but in spirit, you've hit totally on why we exist. I think so many of us have rich stories to tell, and there hasn't really been a good vehicle or company with which to do that, to just make it really easy to do so. The idea of writing an entire book is pretty daunting, and lots of us don't have the tools to do that. So So the backstory, as you mentioned, I started No Story Lost with my cousin, who happens to be my best friend. We grew up together. We were born 6 months apart. And as cousins, we have one grandfather in common. And we went to all these family events together growing up, whether that's Christmas or Thanksgiving or birthdays. And my grandpa was a legend. He was definitely the patriarch. And he always had amazing stories to tell, poems, songs to sing, quite a character. And our family would always say, we have to write his stories down somehow while we still can. And we kind of heard this over and over for like a decade until at some point we were like, this is not happening. We have to do something about this. So the first step was I just sat down with my laptop and asked Pop for some of his stories and just typed while he spoke. And that worked okay, but I mean, luckily I can type pretty quickly, but I'm sure I missed things. It was not the ideal process. Then another time, Jeremy and I sat down with him and recorded him speaking, which was great for two reasons. It meant we could be more present and just enjoy the process. And then secondly, we had the audio clips, which are now a treasure as well. So from there, we put together the very first book for No Story Lost, which is very slender. It's black and white. It's very much like a beta product, but we had this, and then my grandpa ended up passing away in 2020. And so this became a treasure to our family. And we, over that time, really realized like this is an amazing thing to get done for someone in your family. And it's like it was a labor of love. It was a ton of work. And for us, there's a lot of work. And it's like really, this one's like 40 pages. So we thought we could probably pull the pieces together using the technology we understand from running other businesses and make this possible for families in a way that, yeah, it didn't really exist before. So that's the backstory.
Wow. And I'm sure, as you said, especially after your grandfather died, it became even more cherished and valuable to the entire family to have his stories in print.
Totally. Even when, he was 90, so no one's shocked, it still catches you off guard, and you still think, okay, everything we have now is everything we have. So having the stories printed that we have, and again, listening to that audio back is like kind of the only place we have his voice now. So the whole family, I think, is really happy that we got a chance to get some of it down.
So you and Jeremy decided this was something you could do for other people and set up this platform. And I'm curious to know just how it works exactly. How do you go about gathering stories and
Yeah. So if somebody goes to our website and buys one of our projects, the first step is they have what's called a welcome call with our project coordinator. And so that's an opportunity to discuss what would you like out of this project? What part of someone's life would you want us to focus on? What should we ask? What should we maybe not ask if there's anything sensitive? And really plan out what you hope to see in the book. From there, we assign one of our writers. And so we have the same person interview as is going to write the book so that there's really good continuity and the person got to know the storyteller. That same person does the writing. So, yeah, we do usually about four interviews of an hour each, but it could be more or less depending on the family. And then we transcribe the audio, we turn it into a big manuscript, make sure the stories are all in order and flowing, and we remove ums and ahs and run-on sentences, but really just try to make it still sound like the storyteller. So we're not ghostwriting, we're not changing it all around. We're basically providing a collection of stories in their own words. Then we add photos, we add their favorite colors, and then we print what's now more of like a coffee table book. So something you might leave around your house, and let friends and neighbors kind of take a look through. So this is more what the books look like now with like a little bit more professional in color and all that. So that's kind
wow.
of the whole process. Yeah. And obviously, we mail these out to families. So if everything stays on timeline, it's kind of like 3 months from interviewing till you have this memento on your coffee table.
Wow, it's beautiful. I mean, the finished product is so very lovely and something any family would want to keep as a memento and pass down to other generations.
Yeah, that's the goal for sure. And then, as I mentioned, nice to have the audio clips as well. I think it's really important to have something that can just sit out and you see often, and that's why the main thing is the coffee table book. But yeah, we provide obviously the transcripts and the raw audio and everything, so you have those treasures as well.
Yeah, to hear your loved one's voice, there's nothing can replace that.
Exactly. Yeah, even though we write in the voice of the storyteller, something's always lost when you go to text, so it's nice to be able to hear even their tiny little mannerisms and quirks and ways that they speak with the audio too.
Do you ever write books for more than one person in one book?
Yeah, I mean, typically it would be one person or two. So often it's like a mom and dad where we'd have both their stories. And the way we usually do that is we'd interview one person by themselves, then the other person by themselves, then interview them both together. And the book ends up showing kind of like the two stories come together into one, and the family that comes from that too. But we've done a couple very different styles as well. Memorial books in particular, where we'll have multiple people kind of bring their favorite stories about someone who's passed. So we're doing one right now. I think we're interviewing 14 or 15 different people for that one. So yeah, lots of different ways to bring stories into hardcover books.
Oh wow, so that'll be really interesting, 'cause that is another thing we should differentiate. It's one thing to capture someone's history before they die, but some of us don't have that opportunity. So being able to create a memorial book, is that's also really powerful when you have these perspectives from multiple people and how they saw that person or their own individual stories of interacting with that person.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we might interview a childhood friend or a sibling and get a perspective that you might have never heard before on their early life. And then amongst family members, capture some of the stories that you might have known a little bit but are nice to still have down from their more recent years. So those are challenging for our writers because they're emotional often, and they're challenging for family members. But once somebody's in a position where they're ready to talk about it, it can be a really nice way to process and reflect and honor, and nice way to kind of keep a piece of someone with you.
Yeah, it seems like a really helpful part of the grieving process in a way, and to also have something tangible that you can use in a way when you're in a space of wanting to remember your loved one, and something you can look at and pictures right there before you and their own words. Seems like that would be very comforting.
Totally. And one thing we've been lucky to be able to do as well is if the person happened to have written anything before they passed. So sometimes they've collected a bit of their family history or journals or anything like that that they want to include. So we do a mixture, if families ask, of using existing written content and using audio content. So yeah, however we can bring together the stories best.
And do you use questions to prompt people to tell their stories? And what kinds of questions do you ask?
Yeah, we have several different questions lists. We have kind of the basic ones, and then we have lots of more detailed and deeper questions for those who are interested in that. Then for every family, we're always going to ask, like, are there any questions you really want us to ask or parts of their life you want to learn more about? So we've seen the whole range. We get people who you can't stop them from talking, and we could ask one question, and an hour later, they're still going. And there, our job is to kind of rein them in a little bit and make sure that they're telling a cohesive story. And then on the other end, you've got people who are giving one and two word answers, and then it takes a little bit longer to coax them into being comfortable. And we might ask some really basic questions just to get them comfortable talking, and before we get into the deeper questions. And then, like I said, there's the ones that are guided by the family. And then we also do like reflection questions. So thinking back on like life and legacy and advice. And that's usually what we do in the last interview is once we've told the whole life story, there's still that aspect that often people want to share advice, things they would pass on to future generations, reflections on life and that sort of thing. So those are fun questions too.
Oh yeah, it sounds like it. Have you ever heard any advice that you thought, "Oh, wow, that makes sense. I need to remember that."
You know what? What I want to do is eventually pull together a collection of all the advice we've received because, we're into the hundreds of books now, and I think we'll start to see patterns and categories, and maybe we could publish a little book about anonymized advice from all the people we've talked to over the years.
Well, yeah, I'm curious, are these mostly older people that you're interviewing, or do you talk with all
Yeah.
age groups?
Yeah, I would say between 60 and 90 is the most common. Honestly, 75 is the average age of a storyteller. We've had young families tell story who had never met him yet. So the youngest story was about a 2-year-old. And then we're also interviewing a few centenarians right now. So we've got over 100 as well, the whole range.
Wow, huh. That's really interesting. And do you find are a lot of the people you interview, are they someone, say, with a terminal diagnosis who's facing the end of life, or just people who are at a place in life where they just would like to tell their story?
Yeah, that's definitely sometimes the situation. I would say the most common is someone's having a big birthday or anniversary and it's a gift from the family. So the tough part there is like we always say, you have a wedding, it's time to celebrate that part of your life. But there never seems to be like a specific date where, you're 75, you're going to tell your life story now. So I think that's where the bit of the struggle is like, when do you sit down and do this? If you're 75, you might still have 25 years left to live. Who knows? So you don't feel like, oh, it's time to write the story. I think that can be a bit of a challenge that no one
Yeah.
really tells us when is the time to do that. And then other times, yeah, there is the diagnosis or just, general failing health and families want to get on top of it. Depends.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I mean, I'm obviously I work in hospice, so I work with people at the end of life, and we're always talking to them about their legacy and finding meaning in life. But if you're not, if you don't have a terminal diagnosis, I think you're right. Like, when do you start thinking about your legacy? And when do you start
Yeah.
thinking about how do I plan that or what am I going to leave? Because it probably always feels like, but I have so much more time. I'm not ready to look at that yet.
Yeah, something about writing a book or storytelling. I think we imagine that the story needs to have a beginning and a middle and an end. And it seems strange to write it before it's the end, but then you can miss and be too late. So when do you do it? I actually just wrote, totally separate from No Story Lost, sort of a book of my own. And it's like all the things I've learned over the past 10 years in business and from reading and from listening to podcasts. So I mean, I'm 34, and so if I can get my first edition done now, then I don't think there's any time that's too early to start. And hey, if you get to do some bonus chapters in 10 years, even better.
Yeah, all the better. Well, I think that's
Yeah.
great. It's such a good way to kind of reinforce what you have learned by reviewing it, because and sometimes it might be surprising just how much you actually learn in a decade of life.
Yes, I completely agree. And the reason I started writing some of this stuff down is I would find a book that I had read 7 years ago and thought, I don't remember what this is about, but I know it was important and I loved it and had great lessons. So I thought I better start collecting these into different categories and be able to better remember them. And then I think with life, it speaks to the fact, like if you live to 80 years, I think you live something like 30,000 days. A lot of those days might have good little stories in them. The amount of richness and amount of stories that disappear if we don't capture them is like pretty astounding. So finding ways, a lot of people journal, a lot of people find ways to capture that. And this is kind of another way to do that too.
Yeah, I'm curious what kind of feedback you've had from people who've used No Story Lost, like maybe the family members who purchased the book, but then also the people whose story was told.
So for the people purchasing it for the kind of the kids, my favorite ones are the ones that kind of say like once I first cracked open the book and started reading, like I cried happy tears. I started hearing stories I'd never even heard about my dad who's like still with us. But I think there's a bit of an element of similarly, like if someone's around and you kind of know what they've been up to the past 20 years, You might ask the odd question about like, what was this like as a kid? But you still never, most people don't get to the depth of really learning what was it like for you as a kid? Like what, who were your friends? What were your favorite songs? Like where, what did you like to do for fun? I don't think a lot of us do a good job of doing that. So, you know, my favorite part is seeing people learn things they otherwise would never have known about their parents or loved one. So people have been pretty happy with that. And then on the storyteller side, my favorite stories are ones where the storyteller and our interviewer really bond and they kind of create a special relationship. They might only talk for 4 or 6 or 8 hours, but when you're talking about something as intimate as your life story, I think there's a chance to form a really quick bond there. So we've had storytellers who have actually met the interviewers in person or stayed as pen pals, and found the time really therapeutic or found it really valuable. Could help with loneliness, could help with memory. So there's lots of like really rich and valuable things in the process that are beyond just, hey, we have a book now. It's like, oh, maybe this is actually really enjoyable during the process too, and maybe it's helpful and valuable.
Yeah, that's interesting. It attests to the power of stories to connect us to one another and how stories can create bonds, even between two probably very different people at different stages of life, doing completely different things, but just coming together around a story can create such bonds that they stay in touch with each other and continue to have a relationship. That's really powerful.
Yeah, and I think it's really primal. Like, if you think about how wisdom got shared for the first however many thousand years of humanity, that would be how it was done. That's how so many myths and stories and legends got passed down. And for anyone who's written or studied writing, you know how important stories are to the way a human brain learns lessons and makes connections and stuff. If you just write down facts, you're going to lose your reader right away. But if you are able to facts and lessons through stories, people are usually pretty gripped. So again, speaking to the value of telling stories.
Yeah, so very true. And then I know you mentioned somewhere in your work the idea of memento mori, and it seems like that's relevant here also to the work you're doing. If you just want to define what memento mori means and how creating these stories is part of that.
We're definitely on the topic. This is something I've read a little bit about through reading Stoic philosophy. And the Stoics used to remind themselves that one day I'm not going to be here anymore. Memento mori, I think, is probably Latin for like reminder of your death. So some people who are really into Stoic philosophy will have like a tattoo that says memento mori. And there are some beautiful and really powerful lessons in Stoic philosophy around thinking, hopefully not too morbidly, about the fact that you're going to be gone one day. And how does that help you plan what you say and what you do today? How does it help you think about legacy and what's important in your life? It's very easy for us to all get caught up in the details and chores and work of our everyday life. And it's important to realize that some of those things are trivial and don't really matter. And what we should remember is that you're not going to be here one day. And so you should say the things you want to say, do the things you want to do, take that vacation, do that adventure, and also live your life and do the things knowing that like someday those are going to be the things that you did. And we're always turning the current moment into our history and our story. So just kind of be careful with what you're up to. I think I've really like compressed several different aspects of Stoic philosophy into one there, but memento mori is kind of like one of the capstone lessons of the Stoics.
Yeah, and I would say, as someone who's worked in hospice for a long time, that was one of the first lessons that ever came to me from being with people at the end of life was just this recognition every day, like, I don't know how long I have here. I don't know how many days I have. And seeing so much value in that awareness and how much it changed how I lived day to day, paying more attention, being more intentional about everything that I did and every decision I made, thinking that this could be my last day or this might be the last thing I decide to do. And I I find it such a valuable philosophy for me and everything. And I like working in hospice and having these kind of conversations because they fit in with that philosophy and also help remind
Totally.
me. So I imagine in your work, there are reminders there as well as you're gathering these stories.
For sure. Yeah. And even if you aren't thinking, like, even if it's not as realistic to say, okay, today could be my last day, it's kind of hard to live every day like it's going to be your last day. But you could think, this might be the last podcast I'm on, or this might be the last such and such activity. And that just trying to savor those things as if it's the last of that thing, I think is maybe a little bit more realistic and a really good tool as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it makes me realize I have to investigate stoicism because I don't really know very much
Yeah.
about it. So, but the philosophy, memento
It
mori,
sounds like it's
definitely
all
makes
things
sense.
you've got lots of experience with already. A great book that I read is called A Guide to the Good Life, I think. And that's like got a really broad overview of Stoicism. And then you could dive deeper into any of the concepts from there.
That sounds really good. Well,
I'm curious to hear more about your writing on the subject, and your books, especially with like the lessons for the living. Do you want
yeah.
to? I'm sure you've probably talked about it before, but what comes to mind for you as it relates to no story lost or storytelling, especially from like lessons for living from the dying?
Well, all of that book came from stories, really, because in my work in hospice, making home visits to patients, that's what I did. I sat at the bedside and I just listened to them. And so often they wanted to tell me about their lives. Important things they'd done, things they regretted, but I the whole time was a sponge learning from them, just like you were saying, learning from some of the advice and the wisdom that people have to give. And there were themes that kept coming up over and over again, and you were saying you've noticed that too in people's stories, so it's somewhat similar there. I've always been a storyteller, a story gatherer, I think of myself, because I love stories, and so I kind of see life as a whole collection of stories in every day. But so I held on to these stories from my patients, and some of them actually asked me, would you write about my story someday, because I won't be here to do it. And so years later, after gathering so many stories, I decided I'd write a book that told patient stories, but each story follows up with what lesson I learned from that story. And so there were kind of seven overriding lessons that came from it that I learned about life and that actually changed how I lived my life. And so that's why I just see the value of to listen to other people's stories. There's nothing more powerful you can do for your own learning, but also to validate that person and to reinforce that their life has meaning and everyone has something of value that they can share.
Yeah, that's great. You've gone on to honor some of those stories for those people. We actually wrote a blog post on this subject, which I'll send to you afterwards, all about kind of what people regret at the end of their lives or what they hope. And you just spoke to one of them, which was the need to feel remembered. And that really speaks to, I think, what we do as well. Knowing that your story is all written down and the lessons are there for your loved ones to learn from, I think, is a really powerful concept and probably would help with closure kind of towards the end of your life. This is a world, like medically, that I don't know very much at all about. I only know my side of it, and you have so much more experience in this area. But I'd be curious to get your thoughts on the blog post. I'll send it to you afterwards, and I'm sure there's some crossover to your book and your research as well.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to hear about that because you're getting a taste of it, though you're not everyone you work with is at the very end of life, but people are at a stage when they're able to look back and able to kind of put some of the stories together. I think that's one thing that happened for me, was seeing how, wow, this whole collection of things that I've experienced in life, somehow they kind of fit together like the pieces of a puzzle in a way. And you probably saw that when you wrote your book about what you've learned over 10 years.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've got a lot of the reflections we've talked about are in there too, but then there's also business lessons, and it's pretty wide ranging. I would say it doesn't have a central thesis, and that's why I'm not trying to get it published or anything. I've just printed copies for friends because, yeah, it's pretty wide ranging, but.
But that's good. A lot of, well, you still have a lot of more things you'll be learning. The next
Yeah.
decade will bring a
Yeah,
lot
hopefully.
that.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I had down to talk about is a little bit about how No Story Lost has is a reflection of life in general. We've kind of been talking about that and how that relates to transformation. And if you do you see that these helping people tell their stories is connected to transformation, or have you heard feedback around that?
Can you explain what you mean by transformation a little bit more, and then I'll see if I can
Oh,
relate it.
just that it helps bring about change. Like maybe in some families, maybe telling these stories or reading the stories can help people heal. Maybe where there was conflict or where people didn't understand a loved one, and suddenly now they see it differently and they kind of get it, get better who that person was.
Yeah, I would say for this, it really speaks to everyone being really different. And so, in certain things in what we do, there's lots of patterns and things are very similar. So, chapter headings end up being similar, or people follow kind of a similar life arc. But in terms of transformation, I think I've seen wildly different things. So, one was we did an interview for someone. And we interviewed both his parents who had been split up for 20 years or something. And through the process, they decided to chat again. I don't think there's like a, beautiful love story coming back or something, but just reforming broken links or burned bridges, which I thought was really, really interesting. Other transformations. Yeah, I mean, there's just so many difficult and deep things that have been discussed and come out. It's very interesting how quickly people open up to our interviewers. Actually, another friend's parents who are separated had two completely different experiences with No Story Lost. And one, the mom's story moved really quickly, and she talked about kind of her new life and how her life has changed. And kind of some full circle stuff around lessons she taught her kids, and then her kids kind of restated to her. And then on the other side, working with my friend's dad, it was very hard to get his stories down. I think he found it difficult to reflect on the time when the kids were young. And then my friend ended up having to do a lot of the No Story Lost work himself because dad just wasn't comfortable. But then at the end of that all, he'd been holding his mom's book for a year and his dad's book wasn't even done yet. And he kind of came to me and said, "This has by accident been like an even bigger gift because it's created all this time where I've spent with my dad and we've actually explored stuff we've never talked about before." So something about getting into those first couple interviews, finding resistance, finding challenge in it, almost not following through. But then my buddy continuing to nudge him actually broke through and created like a deeper bond. They did work they'd never done otherwise. They talked about things they'd never talked about. And it ended up being something we never could have predicted, could never advertise or pretend to have done ourselves, but it created this beautiful experience. Yeah,
Wow.
to wrap that up, I think like in transformation, that's where we find like completely
Yeah.
different paths that we couldn't, again, couldn't predict and couldn't expect, but some pretty cool stories.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So, do family members ever sit in during the storytelling sessions, or do they ever ask some of the questions of the storyteller?
So they often sit in, whether the person might be hard of hearing, have some memory challenges, English is a second language, or any other barriers. Or just for comfort, we have the person's child often on the line as well. Not always, but pretty often. Usually, we don't let that kind of evolve into the child asking the questions. And usually, it is the interviewer asking all the questions. But again, the child could have given us a list of questions before. And then we have had the odd person who just really is quite private and doesn't want to speak with a stranger. In that case, we've had the child interview with the parent and record it, and then just give us the recordings and let us kind of handle it from there. So there's lots of different strategies we can work with if someone feels uncomfortable or not ready to kind of like instantly open up one-on-one with a stranger. And then again, if you can get the person more comfortable, the richness and depth of the stories is that much better.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So it kind of makes sense. You'll do whatever it may take for each person and each situation.
Within
You
reason.
figure it
We're
out.
starting to do stories in Spanish too, because one of our interviewers speaks Spanish. We've got our limitations. We don't have any other languages yet, but when we can, we'll do kind of whatever we can to make the family comfortable with it.
I wanted to mention for listeners on the podcast who can't see the video that you held up, an example of the beautiful book that you create. So I wanted to describe that it's hardcover. It's what are the dimensions usually?
Yeah, this is the 8x10.
Eight
And
by ten.
then this one, I think, was 4 or 5 hours of interviewing. And once we add all the like covers and quote pages and stuff, this one's 240 pages.
Wow.
So they get to be pretty long. And you'll see anything from like 40 to 100 photos. We include 48 photos in the standard package, but some families like to add more. We just charge a little bit more for that. But we're kind of doing like a modern magazine style layout. So just pretty elevated, lots of space, and lots of photos and color so that it does play nicely to kind of leave it out on the table.
Yeah, full color photos, and then what do you call them? The pages for each section, a color page to introduce each
Just kind of
section of the
chapter
book,
headings.
chapter headings. Really
And then what we call
beautiful.
pull quotes as well. I'm not sure if this one has too many, but sometimes we'll do a big quote on a full page. So that just kind of looks nice too. Like when there's
Oh,
a
yeah.
really good
Yeah.
story or key line, like that looks good too.
That's really nice. It's really nice for just like thumbing through, browsing through the book, because even if you only have a few minutes, you see those quotes. But what a great way to store photos as well, because I mean, I have boxes full of photos that I got from my mother that I'll probably never look at again because it's just so time consuming to sit down and go through them. But when they're in the context of a story, it all makes sense and you see who the people are and you understand what's happening in those photos.
I think a lot of us have that issue, which is like, these photos are amazing. What do we do with them? other than like pull them out from time to time and look through the album. But like you said, having the context around them is really useful too. I know my grandparents have some really, really old photos. And if I look at them, they're interesting in that they're a really old photo, but I don't unfortunately know what was going on like 3 generations, 4 generations ago. So nice
And
to pair them with the stories.
you can look at it and imagine there's got to be a story around that picture if
Oh,
I
for
wish I knew
sure.
what it was. But
Totally.
so attest to the value of doing this, of getting these stories down. So what kind of, you mentioned you have a basic package. I just was kind of curious about what you offer different levels of service, it sounds like.
And they're all really similar. It's just the number of hours of interviews that we offer. So the standard package is 4 hours of interviews. Some families, you might have someone who doesn't like to talk too much, and we have a smaller package that's just 2 hours of interviews. And then we have another package that's 6 hours, but you can also just add an hour here or there if you need to. So we've had some families creep up to 9 or 10 hours, and then the books get to be, like 300 pages. So anything in that range. And then we keep it pretty simple. There aren't really other like types of products or anything. In all cases, it's going to be a number of hours of interviews and then the matching kind of number of photos and the writing and everything. And then if families want to buy extra books, you can just add those on as well. So every project comes with one book. And then we can print more as well.
And you said 3 months is sometimes the turnaround time, which is, that seems really, really quick. That's amazing.
That's about as quick as it goes. We've done like slightly faster for big, big rushes. But basically figure like a couple weeks for interviews, then our team writes the story, then it comes back to the family, then they will do their edits on it. They obviously need to submit us photos and their color choice, and then our designer needs to lay it all out in the book. And then, yeah, kind of like a final edit from the family, and then printing and shipping, which can take a couple weeks as well, depending how the printer's doing and where we're mailing it to. So yeah, it can move pretty quick. I would say for most families, the big things that take a long time are getting us photos, because sometimes that means traveling across the country, going into an attic, pulling out an album and scanning things and choosing them and captioning them. Like, that's a bit of work. And then giving us their edits on the book. So we like to think that when the designed copy comes to the family, it should be pretty much error-free from a technical perspective. But, you know, we might not know which spelling of a certain name you use or the name of a place. So there's some corrections to do. And then some families are really happy and they just say, yeah, it looks great, print it. And other families, then they really want to get their hands dirty and make little corrections and additions and subtractions and really control it a lot, which is fine. And then, yeah, those are the projects that take a little bit longer. So some families do take longer than that. But yeah, but 3 months, I think if everything's moving along on timeline, that's pretty common.
Well, from the little bits that I know about book publishing, I can say it's such a really beautifully done product, you know, the formatting and the layout, the design of the books, from what I can see, it's very high end and very impressive what you're doing there. And so I wanted to give listeners a realistic understanding that it's expensive to print a full color hardcover book like this. Very expensive books with photographs. And so it's not just an inexpensive project. It's a commitment to take
Yeah, for sure.
that needs to be viewed as this is a gift for yourselves or for your loved one, and a worthwhile gift, but one that if you tried to do this on your own or tried to go out and hire a publisher or printer on your own, it would be equally expensive to what they're paying you when you're actually doing all the interviews and doing all the writing as well. So you are making it simple for people to have this product in the end.
Yeah, well, thank you for the compliments. And I definitely would have to shout out my entire team because we have amazing writers and interviewers, transcriptionists, designers, and then our print shop. So I don't have my hands on these things, and that's probably for the best for everybody. But our team is really, really talented. And like you said, you know, it's not your $100 gift. It's definitely a bit of a more of a financial investment than that. But our hope is that it's one of the most meaningful gifts you ever give to a family member. And it really is sort of like a once in a lifetime project. So, yeah, sometimes families will pull together and chip in for a project kind of for all their parents or whatever, if it's a little bit harder to reach financially. But yeah, hopefully, like you said, hopefully the quality kind of matches the investment that people are making.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned your whole team. It seems like a really unique place to work. Like, just not the type of work that anyone would stumble across. So I wonder if your team, if they enjoy it and enjoy gathering these stories and being part of making these books.
Yeah, our hope whenever we hire for somebody, and this goes for our previous business as well, is we make really specific job postings that will probably turn off 90% of people because that's the only way for it to be a dream job for somebody who matches this work perfectly. So our hope is that our employees get to work remotely, they get to listen to people tell stories all day, they get to ask questions and do writing, and love what they're up to. So I would like to say that that's probably the case for most of our team. I think that they would say the same. And yeah, we have like a fun little mix of team members from, yeah, from kind of across different time zones, that we meet up every Tuesday and talk about their challenges and excitement and fun and interesting stories from the different people they're interviewing. And each person takes turns every week answering some questions and getting into the storyteller's seat. So, yeah, just trying to create a fun little culture of people who care a lot about stories.
That's really nice. Well, so tell our listeners if someone's interested, how do they find out more and get in touch with you?
Yeah, nostorylost.com. And from there's an opportunity to use our chat function. It's not a robot. It goes to Tanya on our team, or to e email us or find us on Instagram at No Story Lost as well. Happy to chat, happy to answer any questions. If anyone wants to kind of do a DIY method, we can share some resources. And if anybody wants to ask questions about us doing a project for them, then we're happy to explore that too.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I'm excited about what you're doing. Wishing it, as I said, it had been there for my dad, but I'm hoping other people take this to heart because there may be a day when you will wish you had gathered those precious stories. And honestly, you may think I'll always remember this story my dad told, but there comes a day when those stories begin to fade and you can't really recall them in the same way he would have told them, and it would be an incredible gift and legacy to have this book available.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's amazing to hear your words of encouragement and support on it. I really appreciate it, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're so welcome, and good luck with No Story Lost, and maybe we'll catch up again one day and I'll hear how it's going for you.
Yeah, I hope so. Thanks again.
All right, thank you. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Andrew Hall about the importance of gathering memories and sharing them for families and loved ones to help with our grief, but also to help our loved ones find meaning and remember their own lives and remember everything that they've accomplished and brought to this planet. And so I think their service, No Story Lost, is a great way to create a beautiful keepsake that could be handed down for generations. Please remember, if you enjoy this content, share it with other people who might also benefit from listening in. And also subscribe and leave a rating and review for the podcast wherever you happen to listen. That's very helpful when people are trying to find this kind of information. They are more likely to see it if I have more ratings and reviews present on any of the podcast platforms. So thanks for doing that. All of you have been leaving reviews over the last couple of years. I really appreciate it. And I'll be back next week with an archive interview for you to listen to. So stay tuned for that. And until then, remember, we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of this very precious existence. Bye-bye.